Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm George Chen, and you're listening to SupDoc, a show where we talk to our interesting friends from the worlds of comedy, writing, TV, and film about documentaries. Today, we're talking about the Chris Smith Netflix documentary, Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. And my guest is comedy writer and podcaster Andrew Teeth. The Fire Festival was a much-memed 2017 debacle in the Bahamas, where all the performers canceled, including Blink-182. None of the housing or travel was closed as advertised, and the organizer went to prison for wire fraud. In January 2019, Hulu dropped a surprise competing documentary, Fire Fraud, only a few days before the Netflix doc was set to drop. Competing docs tried to make each other look ethically compromised for several reasons that we're going to get into, but Andrew did not see the Hulu doc, so you don't really have to either to get this conversation. Andrew T. is the creator of Yo, Is This Racist?, which is a long-running blog and podcast about, you guessed it, racism. He's also been a writer for Problematic with Moshe Kasher and has a bunch of other projects in the works. And now here's Andrew T.
Just wait until you see what you're getting yourselves into.
American rapper Ja Rule is in the Bahamas with his business partner.
Billy McFarlane
is an amazing entrepreneur.
He could convince anyone of pretty much anything.
They just bought an island.
Pablo Escobar's island. Oh my God.
Ding! We're gonna throw a festival, yeah.
Within 48 hours,
they sold out. These guys are either completely full of shit or they're the smartest guys in the room.
All right, and we are at my apartment. Andrew T.
Yo, what's here. Up? Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, good to meet you again. Yeah. I mean, I guess we met once.
That counts.
We were at that kind of interesting...
A podcast thing.
Podcasters of Color conference thing,
yeah.
Which I had no idea what it was going to be like, but I'm like, it's free. I'll go.
I didn't either. I feel like I can't remember. Oh, it must have been my friend Catherine Spires was doing it. That's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's the former LA Weekly food person.
The and she has lamented.
Yeah. Have you been following that?
Yeah, for sure.
Dude.
It's sort of the, I mean, look, it's the same world of what we're about to talk about. Those same people, honestly.
I did not put that together. I didn't think about that.
But yeah, if anyone is not in the LA area or not paying attention, LA Weekly, which is like the alt weekly newspaper, got taken over by like right wing goons.
Right.
Like, and it's real gross.
Yeah. And Jeff Weiss started this boycott LA Weekly movement, which seems to have worked.
Partly. Yeah.
It's still there.
I am a surprising number of people who should know better, I would have thought, don't seem to know that LA Weekly is garbage right now.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like a little bit because I, you know, some of my friends will like not like take scab gigs or anything like that, but you know, like people like get profiled and it's like you got to accept the profile, I guess.
Yeah.
But
if you're a band, like, what are you going to say no if you're
you should.
A band?
I guess that's what I would say is I think a lot of people don't know.
That's probably true, too.
So for anyone who doesn't know, don't put your shit in LA Weekly. And more importantly, actually, don't go to MedMen, who I think are still their main, like, advertiser.
Oh, the weed shop?
Yeah, and that's, like, hard for people because everyone loves MedMen and whatever. But seriously, fuck MedMen, fuck LA Weekly.
It's got a pun in it. Of course people like it.
But I will say MedMen is, like... If you were going to be like the bad guys of cannabis, that's how you would design yourself. They're like the bad guys from Dodgeball.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's like everything is so slick and sleek and like, you're like,
okay,
this is like gentrified weed. So fuck them too.
That reminds me, I just was in Oakland for Sketchfest, or I was just in the Bay Area for Sketchfest and I walked by this brand new weed shop is like the day they were opening. I'm like, I don't go to weed stores really, but my friend was like, just come in here with me. We'll check it out.
Take a look.
Like, this is like an Apple store. Yeah, it's designed to be an Apple store.
That might have been a MedMen if it wasn't specifically. That's for sure what MedMen's aesthetic is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's the same. But yeah, it's the gentrification of marijuana. That's gross too.
Which is what these Orange County, that's the theory. It's like, why are these Orange County people even interested in alt weeklies?
Yeah. Well,
because they got rid of, you know, sex work ads in the back a while ago. Apparently, like, that was, I was just hearing that Kamala Harris was like pushing the like
part of that.
Which is, I'm not going to get too deep into it now. I know, like, my mom said she likes Kamala Harris. So if that tells you anything, like, that's, I guess, like, she's mom friendly, I guess.
I'm kind of, I, this is my most cowardly position, but I don't think I care about any Democratic primary.
And, okay. Like, it's, I care, like, it's too early.
I care a little bit, but I do not have any passion for it. Mm-hmm. I think. And that's probably a moral failing of mine, but I'm just like, everyone's like, honestly, fine. Truly.
I guess like when you're looking at what our options are.
It really is like, I'm like, everyone's fine.
She did hand me a pamphlet at the 16th Street and Mission BART when she was running for something in San Francisco.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah, I'll accept that. People are bad and compromised and like have done all kinds of bad things, every candidate, but also they're all fine. Those are my two positions. Like, I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Shit is like,
Mitt Romney.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
Like, he's not one of the Democrats.
Yeah. Like anyone running for the Democratic nomination is fine, I think. I mean, there's definitely ways they're all not fine, but they're also fine.
Yeah.
That's just what it is.
Yeah. Well, took a hard left turn immediately out of the gate.
Jesus Christ, sorry.
Like, look, it's fine. But it's interesting if I were to say, I don't know if you got this, because you only watched the Netflix
show. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't have time to watch.
No, it's fine.
Both.
I think that's like a lot of people made that choice.
Yeah.
A lot of people only knew about the Netflix. A lot of people don't have Hulu, is what I also
Yeah.
But it's also.
Like, I don't remember if I have Hulu, but I just ran out of time.
It's kind of like, I know there's a lot of social media things or media things. I'm like, do I, like, I still have an Elo account, you know? And like, I occasionally
I guess like,
check on that.
Why, you know? If you hadn't, you
know, why get rid of it?
Cancel it. I should cancel Hulu. I don't even know if I have it.
Well, if you don't want to watch Handmaid's Tale, I guess that would be the only other reason to do it.
Yeah.
This and Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Now, I'll say, like, since you've already seen, I watched it in the order of I watched the Hulu one first, which is Fire Fraud.
Okay.
Which is directed by Jenner First and Julia Willoughby-Nason. I should have probably looked up what else they've done, but they're the ones that gave Billy McFarland some amount of money to appear on camera. So they actually have interview footage with Billy McFarland. I know. Okay. So, and the thing is that's funny is like Billy McFarland tried to leverage that to the Netflix producers, directed by Chris Smith, Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. And he claimed that Hulu gave him $250,000 to try to get them to pay him at least $125,000. I've noticed in watching this again, $250,000 comes up a lot. It's like the kind of default number that comes up for like a lot of things.
Oh,
like it's how much they paid Kendall Jenner.
Yeah, it's the appearance fee.
Yeah. By the way, you are obligated to push this on social media when this episode comes out with an orange tile.
Yeah.
Have an orange tile.
That's
for sure.
Perfect.
Yeah.
here's a question.
Yeah. I might know it.
Because you obviously you watch a lot of documentaries.
I do.
Is it common that subjects are paid to be in documentaries? Isn't the whole point that they're not? Or I guess they don't have, even if they can be paid, but they don't. Typically, within whatever documentary ethics, they don't have influence over the cut. Is that right?
Well, I've been seeing more and more, and this is maybe extra true of music documentaries, that they, because it's usually their archival stuff, like their photos and video, that they get like a producer credit on it.
Yeah.
Which always makes me question a documentary after I've watched it when the subject is also a producer.
Yeah.
But it seems inevitably to be the case because you're dealing with their life story. So they got to kind of get a cut somehow.
I guess I'm asking,
unless they're dead.
Yeah.
Posthumously. I mean, that was a thing that came up, you know,
Thin Blue Line.
Yeah.
That guy sued Errol Morris even after the film basically got him out of prison. He's like, well, you used my life story. I'm like, well, I got you out of prison. I think you could probably let that one go. But
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that that would be the case, but I like that Netflix approach was basically, no, we're not going to pay you. You're just not going to be in this one. But they did.
I mean, yeah, there's some questions. Bad.
Yeah. So
if not worse,
that's a question. Which one's worse is really the question. Fuck Jerry or Billy McFarland,
like,
in the scheme of things.
I mean,
so fuck Jerry.
Yeah. So
our co-producers on Fire, the Netflix Fire documentary.
Yeah.
Also,
they are like some of the worst people on the internet. They are they built their entire marketing company based on stealing jokes. I fucking hate them. I actually felt guilty watching the documentary, the Netflix, because I fucking hate them.
You knew about this before.
Yeah,
I didn't know about it. I mean, I knew about the fat Jewish guy.
Yeah, so the fat Jew and Fuck Jerry do the same thing where they steal people's jokes.
Yeah.
100% steal people's jokes under the auspices of quote unquote curation, repost them on their Instagram feeds and Twitter for a while, and that's it.
Yeah, like they don't even recreate the meme, they just crop the name credit out.
They've lately started under threat of, I assume, lawsuits or maybe under filed lawsuits, leaving the name, and they will make a comment on the bottom, and that's sort of their version of fair use commentary, etc.
Interesting.
I mean, you can tell they are uncreative, terrible assholes because their comments are never very good, and they're trading on the jokes of people who, you know,
Vine stars or comedians,
mostly comics. Yeah. And it's just like this kind of like revolting, like have it both ways thing that's evident throughout the documentary is. But yeah, those people are fucking scum, and it's like important that be part of the lens that is very clearly not part of the lens in the Netflix documentary.
Yeah, they're the ones that provide most of the really good footage in the Netflix documentary, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly.
The case, because like having seen the Hulu documentary that does not have the Fuck Jerry guy's footage, it's a lot of, they use a lot of, you know, clip video, just generic clips.
Oh yeah. Well, I will say, actually, I guess I didn't see whether this was fully confirmed, but I feel pretty confident because it's their MO. People were pointing out that their work about their jokes about the Fire Festival were used in that documentary also without attribution or credit or permission.
Okay.
So it's just like, you know, continually. And you can see because, right, they turned whatever lemons they were given whatever lemons they greedily snatched up thinking they were going to profit
bred
from it. Yeah.
they turned
it into lemonade by producing this documentary. They're sort of like one of those. They're the people that, like, they're such uncreative bottom feeders that they will just try and recycle anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they do, which is what this entire documentary is.
Yeah. even the fact that, like, Billy McFarland, while he's like out on bail, hires a film crew to get more footage of him committing more crimes.
Yeah.
Which is so insane that he thought that was a good idea to do that. And then one of his friends is just like, you just got to lean into it, man. You just got to make this. It could be gold if you lean into being the fire guy. And he's just like, I legally can't do it, but I'll hire another guy to kind of be the face of my other scam I do. When this happened in, I guess, was it like summer of 2017?
Yeah.
Were you following it pretty closely at all, or did it come up in your feed?
It definitely came up in my feed. I'm sure if you go back, you can find something I wrote about it. I tend not to be able to get so on top of things like that for some reason. Well, like, I'm on Twitter a lot, but I didn't have any fresh takes, I don't think. Go back in my Twitter feed. Maybe I said something amazing. But I'm sure if I did, it would have been stolen by Fuck Jerry. So whatever take I had was not that great. I mean, I think
It wasn't explicitly racial.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So no one brought it up specifically.
Yeah,
like,
no one.
It's
came,
white people suffering.
No one came at me. No, I mean, well, I think like I well, we should talk about that because actually, like one of the people in the fire documentary that comes off the worst is that Asian dude.
Oh yes, I got his name down here. Justin Liao,
true scum as well.
Oof, yeah,
fuck that guy.
But not here, invited.
I think the thing that documentary, and I suspect the Hulu one is there's literally like less than 5 people who appear on camera, like named people who are remotely sympathetic in this entire endeavor.
Right.
I think the thing that it's a little hard to like, there's the documentary is really, or sorry, the Netflix documentary does a very, very poor job of pointing out that the people who were ripped off are also scum.
Other than that guy, Justin Liao, the guy who decided to pee on the mattresses.
A little bit, yeah, but sort of not. I mean, he voluntarily gave that take, and he doesn't seem to be, like, hurting for it. And he's, like, still presented in, like, you know, an attractive way and this. But, you know, all the people that went to that thing are terrible people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of like any classic grift. Like, it requires greed to make it work. And there, that's why, you know, we love a story of a grifter in America, because it's like, yeah, you know, that you pulled one over on these terrible people. Of course, you know, in reality, there's a trail of victims along the way, who are not, guilty of anything. But yeah, the Netflix doc does a really poor job. It just basically, if you counted, you know, everyone who would be a quote unquote victim, in that documentary, I mean, what, 90% of them, all the white people and the one Asian dude are also scum.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're terrible. Basically, it's only the two named Bahamians are not awful people.
Right. JR and Marianne Raleigh, who, as far as we know, she paid out $50,000 of her own money. And that was after that happened. She made a GoFundMe and she's like made 4 times that money back. Which is great.
I said this. I can't remember if I said this out loud or on another podcast, so I apologize. But we're in the fucking type of twisted media landscape where you could probably throw a fire festival in the Bahamas next year.
Okay.
Where you get fans of this documentary to fly down and, you know, stay in a kitschy, like, fucked up tent and eat terrible food, and everyone watches the documentary.
Yeah, they like
together.
They want the cheese sandwiches this time.
I'm 100% convinced that could happen as soon as this summer if people wanted it to.
Yeah. It'll be called the Eczemas,
honestly,
or something.
Yeah. It would be called the Fire Fraud It would be called the Fire Fraud Festival.
Yeah,
and it would be like a podcasty wonky doc festival. You know, you'd get a bunch of like fucking white people that go down and
chase
talk about
pigs
documentary.
Around. Yeah.
You know, but on their off days, they can swim. I'm serious. This could happen.
Okay. Then who will throw it? Netflix throws it. It's
going
to be Netflix throwing it. Or it'll be Hulu will throw it a week before Netflix throws it.
I think
they'll build all the infrastructure.
I think
they'll burn it down.
It would be like a... like a con, like not sorry, not like a
oh,
not
yeah.
Like a
no,
like
no,
a
no.
festival.
No,
yeah.
Like a con, like, or you mean like a comic
convention?
Con.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, like no one's done a documentary fan, like a documentary cosplay convention.
Yes.
And you would do it in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that's what we need. Actually, I'm going to call Ja Rule up.
Yeah.
And we're going to like talk about
the con.
Doing the doc con.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be someone a bunch of people pretending to be Werner Herzog.
I'm genuinely serious. If someone is already planning this for sure. I promise someone's planning this.
But I mean,
and they are also scum.
This is reminding me because I used to put on music concerts a lot, and we, you know, was nothing at the scale of this at all, right?
Yeah.
Like if I ever I watched this and I kind of had nightmares. Kind of about organizational, like logistical admin stuff after watching this, because it really puts like the time frame into your face of just like,
yeah,
like, oh, you're going to build like all this infrastructure, and in like less than 2 months they like switched out their entire team like 3-4 months yeah. before it was supposed to happen. It's just the insanity. And I don't even like festivals now. God, no. I don't. Have you been to like a music festival in a while?
Not in a while. Yeah. It's not really my thing. I can do drugs in a field by myself.
Yeah.
I prefer it.
I have like no interest in going to Coachella, honestly. Yeah, exactly. Like it seems like I don't like camping. I don't like that many crowds.
Yeah.
And I went to the FYF Fest maybe like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Which was just like at the Olympic Stadium. And it was like, that was like,
they changed the name of the Fuck Yeah Fest into the FYF Fest.
Oh, which is an extra F.
Which is bonkers.
Yeah.
Just what is, people in Los Angeles are so fucking stupid. It really, I hate it so much. I love the city, but Jesus Christ.
What? No, no, let's talk more about that.
What is wrong with you people?
Yeah, how they'll read the LA Weekly. They'll go to FYF
exactly,
Fest.
Exactly. It's just FY Fest.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Also, what was wrong with fuck?
FYF.
What was wrong?
Yeah.
What was wrong with fuck?
It's just so upsetting to me. So upsetting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But see, that to me, the other like issue is that like the Netflix documentary truly presents it as a logistical failure and sort of tacks on the fraud at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And that feels like wildly irresponsible.
Right. I will say, like, I just started watching the Hulu one again just to remind mm-hmm. myself of the differences. That one definitely, like, front loads everything.
Yeah.
With just, like, the footage of, you know, the people rolling up to the tents and all that stuff and just presents it more like you're definitely going to see, like, this. It's going to get to this point.
Yeah.
During this thing. Whereas, right, like, Netflix almost takes it more like as a more reasonable thing. Tell you,
because it's from the point of view of the producers
of
the festival. Yeah. And in their eyes, this was a fun thing that slowly doubt started creeping in until it was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not smart.
Yeah.
It's just not a smart like thing. It's just like, it's the kind of like, and then version of storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where you're like, But with, you know, an intentional eye towards slow, basically by putting you in their shoes, you engender sympathy for everyone except for Billy, right. Basically.
Because he's not.
Because he's sort of the villain.
Mm-hmm.
Again, everyone's the villain in this.
Right. Let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
And play a clip from the movie.
We can figure out how to make an extra $3-5 million. Whether it's higher tier artist passes, food and alcohol passes, VIP party passes, the Kendall Jenner yacht party for $10,000 a head for 100 people.
Billy had a vision, you know, and he was definitely thinking of every little twist that he could come up with to raise the money to make it happen.
But there's two things going for us. One, an audience who has cash, and us, we have the celebrity, we have the island, there's ways we can monetize people, and we're going to make that happen.
I overheard a conversation. Let's put up a cabana for $50,000 and see if anyone buys it. And I remember thinking, do you have a cabana to sell them? Because I'm feeling concerned that you're not thinking about that before you are putting it live on the site for someone to buy.
All right. And that was a clip from Fire the Great. Not Walk With Me. I was going to say Walk With Me.
Oh, man. What?
Well, that would have been the third movie
so
to come out.
So much better.
Fire.
So much
rock
better.
With me.
Yeah.
David Lynch hangs out with a bunch of pigs on an island.
Yeah.
I think that legitimately.
Better.
Speaking of pigs on an island.
Yes.
You were talking about our boy Justin Liao, very Lord of the Flies. He just decides it's every man for himself,
yeah,
grabbing a tent.
Yeah.
He's like, starts just trashing tents, stabbing them,
yeah, other
pissing
tent,
on
making
stuff.
Things worse.
That really did stuck out to me too. And as like two Asian men, I guess we are allowed to really dig into it a little bit more.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
What is
not
there
that no one else is allowed to, but just as one of the few minorities who's not Bahamian in this thing.
Yeah.
Or yeah.
I mean, I think to me, there's nothing really so much to say about it other than he's clearly a guy that, you know, influencer culture is very white.
Mm-hmm.
He has sort of the looks and attitude to be very white adjacent, bolstered by the Asian parts of the Asian community that are also very white adjacent. So I'm not saying he's not allowed to be Asian,
but he profits from white supremacy and fuck that dude. Is he worse than anyone else in there? I guess. See, he almost had a moment of, it's like, if you could frame it as fuck these greedy assholes, I came to destroy them. There's just no actual
right. A little moment. More like the Joker. He's yeah. just like the Joker
if,
of the island.
If someone had been more able to just say, yeah, fuck these people.
Mm-hmm.
But at least the Netflix one, not able to do it because they're presented as victims.
Mm-hmm.
And they are only mildly victims.
Right.
They are still, again, you know, on the balance, terrible people.
Oh, yeah. Like, there is a guy who worked for... Okay, so then it's confusing because Fyre was supposed to be an app, and then this just, like, spiraled out into the festival thing. But also, it was a terrible idea for an app, I think. The idea for the app is that you could book a celebrity...
Yeah, it's crazy.
...without going through proper channels. I'm like, is why this festival turned out the way it is. No one, like, everyone wanted to disrupt shit.
Yeah.
That, like... is not great, but is better than the alternative.
I mean, there's also like the idea that like, I mean, we don't need to get into various business plans, having already presented an amazing one, but the reason you use an app is that you can have a computer scale little and common transactions many, many times. And when that computer does those things, it adds up and then you can start, you know, $1 million business, whatever. The number of people that need to book a $250,000 appearance from Ja Rule, hopefully, is not in the six figures even.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be the case. And again, if it is the case, then, you know, the revolution is... imminent.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
There's no good reason to have, because this isn't like rides or like putting your opinion out or like connecting with like both your loved ones and racist and your racist loved ones. Like, these aren't things that are common that everyday people can do, that if you skim a quarter of a penny off of every human being alive, you're a billionaire. Mm-hmm. This is if you skim
buying a house.
$10,000 from the admittedly significant but not that significant number of billionaires and multimillionaires in the world, then like what?
They don't need a fucking app though.
Yeah.
They just call the booking agent.
Yeah.
And the booking agent's like, okay, you're rich. Fine.
Call, I'll do it. A Google search. Have your assistant call one of four agents.
It's not that hard.
It's ridiculous. It's
not that fucking hard. Which is also like, I think, illustrated by... Actually, there's
yeah, the PA love this who actually does the booking.
Yeah, the PA who does the booking, Samuel Crossed. He's like 22, and he's like, my first people I booked were Major Lazer, and I vastly overpaid them. I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't do that.
That's
one of the first things. Don't vastly overpay your talent.
But I think if you go back, there's like the idea that like, you know, tech culture in general believes like, there are a few smart people in tech that identified like inefficiencies in the way we do things that computers can solve. And then there's the 80% of people in tech who are idiots, who are uncreative idiots, like the people at Fuck Jerry, and took the lesson that computers can change things. That's where disruption, the idea of disruption comes in, and thinks and are applying their small amount of creativity to like quote unquote disrupting everything. But disrupting the fucking celebrity appearance market is insanity.
Yeah, it makes no sense. I mean, the story at the beginning is that Billy McFarlane wants to book Ja Rule, and he has to talk to a couple of people that he finds like on Instagram or something, a guy named Jesse Muscles and a guy named Gutter. And then Ja Rule's just sitting there laughing because he's like,
well, because also like that means Billy McFarlane was too stupid to call like an agent, but instead thought, I will just DM them, because he is so confident in himself that he thought he could just do that.
If you want to get to the origins of Billy McFarlane's confidence game, that is addressed a little bit better because of the Hulu doc.
Okay.
He's interviewing the Hulu doc, and he talks, you know, every like every venture capital, like tech bro thinks they're a genius from the time they were a child.
Yeah.
There was like even like a computer read out emails from his mom talking about how advanced he was. He was like swimming in the ocean when he was 10.
Right.
Stuff like that. He says, and this is in his own words, he's like in second grade, he likes a girl in his class. She breaks a crayon. And then he tries to like sell her a new crayon. Like that's his idea of his innovation.
Yeah.
And then, which is like unclear, like if he's just, is he melting two crayons together? They don't get into the technical. I'm like, I'd still like to know what you do to what your crayon business is in second grade. Like, what is your crayon business? And then he like comes up with some kind of weird marketing scheme, which is just like to tell other teachers that he has a market cornered on crayons. This is like a second in second grade. He's firstly like that's his idea of like how he's going to go over with a crush is like charge her money.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, it's very transactional.
I think people don't realize that like lies and pyramid schemes can work, but they are as evidence that they are as evidence of your own genius. It's very slim. I think that's the thing. It's like, yeah, of course you can get rich, like ripping people off. Like, of course. But that doesn't make you that smart. And we live in a world. I mean, and the even worse thing, as we're seeing, is that not only do these people believe their own business acumen, they think that a slight like flair for criminality and computer programming, which is the easiest thing in the world, makes them smart in other domains, which is like, it's so, I mean, we like, you know, as much as I applaud like, you know, this idea of like STEM and like getting people who are underrepresented in those areas, like we do still conflate STEM with creativity and intelligence. And those are not even fucking close. Like it's wild. It's wild. Like how that's like an unquestioned assumption. It's kind of up there with like IQ as like, yeah, guess what? This is like a flawed assumption that we have allowed to pervade our fucking society. It's pathetic. It's pathetic that we need that shit. Anyway, fuck us.
No, I mean, as someone, I was proud of my IQ at one point. I can't remember what it is anymore. Oh, of course.
Yeah. But like,
No, STEM does not equal creativity. Or this like idea that his idols were like Zuckerberg. And it's like, huh, who is also in trouble with everyone now for fucking up the world, basically.
And Zuckerberg is like, he's not smart. Like, he's fine. He's fine.
He ripped off like Friendster.
Yeah,
basically.
He's good at a couple things, but I don't know. So what?
Like, I mean, yeah, just to go back to like the other thing that you get a little bit more background in the Hulu doc that they kind of touch on it here is the whole Magnesis thing.
Sure.
Which is hilarious.
Right.
That they're just all he did was take a credit card and put it on metal. And that was enough. People were like, I watched all of that being like, what? Why is anyone impressed by that? Why does anyone care that your credit card is on metal?
There was like a kind of like fake ass Soho house associated with it.
That house was real. So like when I looked at what he was doing, and like he's trying to reinvent the idea of credit card exclusive, you know, perks, but for millennials. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing that is kind of annoying about the Hulu doc is how much it harps on, well, this is because they're millennials, which is not necessarily the case. I mean, that's who kind of end up going. And that's like, you know, who knows who these bands, I mean, other than Blink-182 or whatever, yeah, right? Wow. Like, you know, I don't think millennials, they kind of know Blink-182, right? But they don't really.
I hope not.
Or even like, just like the music is not my generation or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, it's not because millennials are inherently gullible, or they're making this argument like millennials grew up in such a crazy time that they need to escape.
Yeah.
And they need this fantasy that is just built around supermodels.
The generation that thinks Donald Trump is a businessman is a good businessman cannot throw stones at marketing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's just marketing. It played upon greed. that's like tale as old as time. Like that is it's the idea that that's generational is like a thing where this is just old people needing to not be suckers themselves, because mm-hmm. their version of Fire Festival is like
Altamont.
It's like raising taxes. Oh, like, right. Sorry, eliminating taxes. Their right. version of Fire Festival is like eliminating taxes.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you know, taking their Social Security and like reasonable economy, but yanking ours. It's like, fuck them. Mm-hmm. Like, I really, they're both scammers, the baby boomer generation and Gen X. It's like they're both the scammers who maybe are going to get away with it. They currently are. Mm-hmm. But they're also victims. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's one other thing that you were missing by only watching the Netflix doc. There's not a lot. I mean, I think all in all, even though we obviously hate Fuck Jerry, it's a slightly better put together, more coherent doc that just tells the story of what happened.
Right.
I think the Hulu one does try to make it like a generational thing, or like it's about, you know, social media, the power of social media. And,
right.
Which they both kind of talk about. And like, I guess I wasn't, there's another documentary that's kind of covers the same shit and features the fat Jew, which is American Meme.
Yes.
If you've seen that one.
I have not, like, but yeah.
Plays
I know about
a little
it. Yeah.
bit of the same stuff. But yeah, it doesn't talk about the Fuck Jerry people in that situation, but yeah.
What the other generational element of it is, like, look at anyone's like racist uncle's Facebook page and come back and talk about how millennials are more gullible than baby boomers. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, they are for sure less gullible than baby boomers. Mm-hmm. That's just a fact.
Yeah. I mean, the ones that can just throw $250,000 around for a vacation seems like that's like sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think out?
I mean,
they bought into the stupidest video, which I saw that video.
Yeah.
When that was like circulating, and like, I wouldn't want to go to this.
Right.
I don't understand like
right.
the exact appeal is. It's, I didn't even know who most of those models were. I guess one of them was from the Blurred Lines video.
I knew all the models, but the point is,
I'm like, they're not going to be there. I'm like, I know they're not going to be there. They paid them to be there the one time. They're not going to be there the other time. Are they performing? No, they're not performing.
Yeah.
Like, who's on the lineup for this thing?
I mean, to the extent that like millennials as a generation are unique to this, it's that they have grown up in a time when financial security is so non-existent that the lesson the generation has learned is that money is ephemeral. Oh, so yeah. You may as well fucking spend it if you have it. And that it maybe makes them more like susceptible to scams like this. Again, I don't think so. It's like,
no, I actually have heard something like this, that like basically experiential purchases are bigger now.
Yeah.
And like, like escape rooms are worth more in a way than, you know, a nice dinner or something. Or like,
or
the fact that food culture is so big as it is. It's like, might as well just have these like bodily pleasures.
Yeah. We may as well consume it because it, like, it's ultimately like nihilistic, right? There's mm-hmm. no future. Why save? Like, you know, our parents who saved are suckers for like putting their money in a house that lost its value, like, you know, by 80%.
If this was the overt text of Fire Festival, then people could have really leaned into it.
Exactly.
Like, as an apocalyptic
experience. If they wanted
like, full on Fury Road it, you know?
Yeah. This is a worthless and nothing. And you had a worthless and nothing experience that you were still able to Instagram.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the idea that their purgatory is just, well, they were locked in an airport without food for a while, which is,
yeah.
I don't know if that's criminal. I don't know what that is. It would definitely bother me if it happened to me.
It feels like locking them in.
The locking part maybe was the part.
It seemed like very extreme. Yeah. I don't understand why that was a part of it. Yeah, I mean, it's just like,
also the idea that this guy was charismatic at all is so confusing to me.
But like,
he's the greatest entrepreneurial mind of his generation. I'm like, really? Like the crayon guy?
But I think that's the thing. It's like, you just have to like, if I feel like there's so many lenses through which you would view this doc.
And like three more documentaries could be made about it. Like,
oh yeah. I mean, again, I don't think there's like
Amazon Prime's going to make one. Oh, CISO's going to come back from the grave and make one.
Because there is that like fundamental thing of like who you relate to. We see it all the time in mm-hmm. the media. It's like a thing. And like ultimately more people than should relate to Billy McFarland. You know, here's what I will say is like watching the conversation around these documentaries and then the so I will just I put this on my Twitter. I'll just go ahead and it was a
retweet good live retweet.
But here's what happened was like after I watched it, Netflix immediately tried to pull me into the Ted Bundy documentary.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Was, yeah. Similarly.
Yeah.
Which was like a thing where I'm like, right. And my joke, which was not that much of a joke, was that like, oh, OK, Netflix clearly has a variable called like zeitgeisty documentaries for amoral assholes who will definitely not get the message. Mm-hmm. And that's another one. Like,
yeah, it's an app where I can kill people.
Yeah,
I'm going to make an app where like if you want to be a victim, I'll kill you.
As a culture, like I think one of the big disconnects that we have is like we're so unprepared for anti-heroes. I use this example all the time. Don Draper is not, people don't get the lesson of Mad Men, mm-hmm. including, I think, the creators. Because it's like, they are not equipped to properly condemn the actions of that generation because they relate to it too much. So, like, yeah, baby boomer, Korean War generation, like, those people are scumbags. And sure, say Mad Men or Breaking Bad or whatever, quote unquote, shows them being scumbags. But we are so wired as like a media society to relate to protagonists, especially if they're white dudes, that the lesson, even if it's subconscious, like always goes the wrong fucking way. Mm-hmm. Like, do people hate Don Draper or want to be Don Draper? I would say the worst people want to be Don Draper and they do not understand what the difference is. I don't know. And I think the same thing is happening in the Netflix. Like it would be like, okay, maybe you're not so into Billy McFarland, but all of the other fucking high level white dudes as part of it, it's presented that you relate to them. Mm-hmm. You know, they talk about their stress and that's just how storytelling works. It's like you subconsciously relate to them. In a way that is like bad. Mm-hmm. Again, no one in that documentary, except for the two black people, are worthy of anything.
What do you make of the character Andy King, who's like his basically event planner guy who is working with the Magnesis? That's the guy who's like,
yeah.
If they ask him to release the Evian water, and people, that's become kind of a meme thing.
It has become a meme.
Which is weird because, like, firstly, it's like super offensive. They're just like, "You're gay, right?
Yeah,
you'll just suck anyone's dick."
It seems really like it's presented in that documentary in such a like out of context drop in way that it feels. Again, I'm sure there's arguments against this, but it feels like the worst people are getting a homophobic chuckle out of it mm-hmm. more than anything else. Like, I think like it doesn't. The story doesn't make any sense. The story is not like complete. It doesn't lead anywhere. It's sensational and it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. Like it's, I guess, supposed to show his desperation, but there's no commentary on the homophobic assholes. If the story played out as it is alleged, like as it is told, like those people are homophobes. It's weird. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about?
It's kind of like the cult part of it, right? It's like becomes like Wild Wild Country at that point or something, I guess.
I guess so.
Like he's believed in Billy so far as to sort of be willing to do like, you know, favors to get to try to, you know, for water. I don't know.
Maybe.
You're right. Like it doesn't really, the guys that run this thing are definitely homophobic. It's like yeah. The entire thing is super heteronormative in that there is like 10, you know, Instagram models
as
started the whole thing off. And I guess if you like Ja Rule, then maybe he's like the sex appeal for the male view. I don't know. But
yeah, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, that's all. It's all. That was the other thing watching that video. I'm like, they were. This is not. There's obviously not going to be this. Like, I, even at any concert, like, yeah, it's not like all. It's not, you know, all quote unquote beautiful people like go to these concerts anyway. But this guy, I mean, this guy was like working on all those Magnesis like party house events and stuff.
Totally.
So that's kind of like he's really. I watching this again, I was like, oh yeah, well now I know that this is coming. I'm really paying attention to what this guy is saying now.
Right, right. Because
when it kind of drops in, he's just one of like 12 talking heads that you're hearing from.
Yeah,
and then
totally.
You're like, oh yeah, this guy's all right. What? This story. Okay. And then that's just like one of the big things that is in this doc that's not in the other doc. And so that's like one thing people weigh and just like
the
presence of that story.
Well, they
let it doesn't really relate to like,
it has no meaning.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, it's just like, well, you can see like the, uncreative scumbags that fuck Jerry thinking, we gotta use this story, bro. We gotta use this story. And it's like, what does it mean? Why? What does it do? What does it tell you? Like, it doesn't, it just, and it, I guess I will just say it nothing, it's such an obvious lie. Like, the way it's told, you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, none of this happened that way. There's no way adults did this. I'm serious. Like, you know, like, even the way he's telling it, you're like, you're lying, dude. Like, you're lying. Like, you're sensationalizing. I would, here's what I would guess. It was, they figured out that the guy in charge of the imports was gay. They made a joke like, we'll just go suck his dick, dude. That joke got repeated so much around the fucking office that that became, that like calcified into the story. And then he just tells it because like, it's like it, what? It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a story that is, that it's here's why you can tell it's not a real story. Cause it's a story that a homophobic frat boy would tell. You know, it feels like if a homophobic frat boy was writing gay porn, that's how it would go down. Because there's just no, it just,
I wouldn't have to do it and I get the water.
Yeah. I'm just like, what are you fucking talking about? Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Oh, man.
It just, yeah, whatever. It didn't happen that way.
Yeah.
That's all. Like, and including it in the documentary, like, maybe has some value showing, like, how enthralled to Billy they were, but it mostly has value in delighting homophobes. That's my, like, it's just such a weird fucking moment.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah, like, it became like the meme.
Like
that people
don't, yeah,
come
don't
out
get me
this.
Wrong. It 100% worked. It's just gross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also, did you ever watch American Movie?
I did.
Yeah, and this is the same director that did American Movie.
Oh.
Which sort of like put it in, I was setting up different expectations. So all the things that you're thinking are like, fuck Jerry guys, I'm still like sort of viewing through
the
view of like.
Sorry, I keep twisting that knife because I just want to mention fuck those guys, but of course, yes, they're just producers.
I mean, like,
they're so uncreative that they couldn't possibly actually be making these decisions or be allowed to.
Or like the fact that like they are partnering with Chris Smith, who has made legitimately good documentaries about what are kind of bad art or failed projects, essentially. That's the part that I thought was going to make this really interesting is the Chris Smith lens.
Yeah.
But he also did, I'd say, like, you know, I think he did a good job with the Jim and Andy documentary also.
So I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. But it's like, again, it's a thing where you're dealing with mostly, you know, archival footage, right? You're not shooting too much new. Stuff he shoots that's new is like the interviews with like Jim Carrey. Obviously, you can't interview, you know, that many other people from that era. But, you know, I think about it like, you know, the way they made Coven or Coven.
Yeah, sure.
But then, like, if it was like, but that's charming and it's low stakes.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like whimsical. And this is like, could be whimsical, except for it became incredibly high stakes immediately.
Yeah. And again, more whimsical to me if those motherfuckers had all died on that island. That's a much better story.
Yeah. I guess like the comedy part, comedy out of documentaries is sort of like, there's sort of this tradition where it's like people that take things super seriously that are very low stakes, which is just like kind of like the same as like Waiting for Guffman.
Yeah.
Right. It's the same premise
sure.
of that. And then there's sort of this thing where it's like people that are just fucking idiots
yeah.
that are just incompetent at everything. And then they've suckered a bunch of people into doing their thing. And the stakes end up being the real people that are victimized are the Bahamians, the yes. people that live on the eczemas. Yes. And there is also this character that shows up in both documentaries, and he's the guy who is like a financial guy. His name's Calvin Well, and he really wants to expose the thing. He's the guy who
yes.
made
yes.
the fire fraud Twitter. Yeah. And I feel like he's kind of like the Jeff Weiss boycott LA Weekly
yeah.
of this story.
I mean, if these like documentaries weren't, they would disagree, but I will say if they weren't fundamentally sympathetic to the people involved, including the customers of Fyre Festival, the twin like actual protagonist lenses that make any sense are that guy or through the eyes of the Bahamians. Mm-hmm. Like nothing else does the world any good.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is ultimately propping up like terrible people, mm-hmm. even if it's subconsciously, which it very much is. I mean, I think so. Sorry, what was the director of the?
Chris Netflix? Smith.
Chris
yeah.
Smith. So the thing with American Movie is that it similarly has a very sympathetic lens to the characters, and it feels like, you know, like as you know, you're probably way more aware than I am as someone who watches so many documentaries. Like, I think the other thing is people. The general public has this illusion that documentaries are objective. Yeah. This is the truth. Mm-hmm. This is like what happened because mm-hmm. it's based on reality. And that is like really damaging, I think, mm-hmm. because it's like pretending that these people like even American Movie, I remember watching that because I grew up in Michigan, right? Mm-hmm. So I did know a lot of like scumbags who were like too big for their britches, like white scumbag, rural Midwestern scumbags. And yeah, they can be funny sometimes. They can also be scary and like terrible, terrible, terrible people, mm-hmm. you know, the worst people on earth, honestly. And when I watched American Movie, I was like, okay, but I don't like this guy, you mm-hmm. know, and like, I don't like, you know, I get it and I get there's like a funniness to it, but it's not for me. And I feel like that sympathy is extended in the Fyre Festival doc that is not deserved.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so to me, I guess I'm like, you know, those extending those sympathies, I'm just like, this is ugh.
So you didn't enjoy anything in here, like even at a Schadenfreude level, which is like basically what got me interested in the whole thing.
Of course,
in the beginning.
Yeah.
Of course, as a Schadenfreude,
yeah,
it fulfills a lot there.
Yeah,
but you feel like it's not soft enough. Pedals.
Yeah, I think it. I think it's soft pedals.
Okay.
That like because who's the
it's like a Wolf of Wall Street situation, kind
but,
of.
Yeah,
right.
But
like, some people are like, I love that guy in Wolf yeah. of Wall Street, right? It's the same.
I also think Wolf of Wall Street is, and Vice, and like any anti-hero mm-hmm. thing that's out often is extremely irresponsible.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see Vice yet.
I haven't either. Sorry. Yeah, I should say, but like,
I've heard nothing good about it.
But
it,
you know, but Wolf of Wall Street, like, sure, it doesn't show those guys in a good light, but it does.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, mm-hmm. again, we are incapable. Sorry. Some of us are capable, but most of us, and especially the worst of us, mm-hmm. are incapable of processing antiheroes correctly. And I think that is, you know, has become evident. Again, we have the world's number one antihero as our president right now. And I think it's because to enough of Americans and the world, he's not an anti-hero. He's just a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other anti-heroes are just heroes. And is it like the way storytelling works? Is it just fundamentally bad people? Like, I guess I don't know. And I'm willing to think about it in a different lens.
Like, the anti-hero is sort of the extension of irony. And
yeah.
Like, and like how
and it doesn't
irony
work.
Culture stopped working, like you'd say, in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Basically, like, irony worked up to a certain point, and then it didn't work.
I would argue it died in like 1978, but like, yeah, something, you know, whatever.
Well, it was very prevalent as a as a form of, as an aesthetic in through the 90s.
Of course.
But it's the most 90s aesthetic.
It was not, right. Yeah. And I would argue that
and
it
the
wasn't,
Gen X,
it wasn't
Gen Xers.
Quote unquote working then.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I just think, I mean, and the other way you can tell, the thing that bolsters my anti-hero argument is, I'm going to say it a hyperbole, but it's always white guys who are anti-heroes,
mm-hmm.
right? Of course, it's not always, but
I'm trying to think of an exception now, and it's not coming, nothing's coming to me, really.
Yeah, like, yeah. You know, it doesn't really... That is not a luxury that's afforded to people of color. It's rarely afforded to women. Okay. It's rarely afforded to LGBTQ people. Like,
mm-hmm. Maybe like Red Sparrow or something. I don't know. I'm trying to think.
Kinda,
like,
yeah.
Just
Monster
just,
a little bit.
Like, yeah, right. Would you say, yeah. Like transgressive.
Yeah.
Because
like white men are allowed to be morally compromised.
Yeah.
Because there's so much representation of them.
Or just like fucking Hannibal or something.
Yeah,
right. That's
right.
An ultimate anti-hero. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think.
Or Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy. Yeah. We're saying, I mean, literally like just the reaction of how Ted Bundy is being like portrayed. You're like, oh, okay, we're too stupid to process irony correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. I mean, but I would argue that anti-heroes are a definitely racialized, definitely gendered construct, mm-hmm. that, you know, maybe anti-heroes aren't inherently like problematic, but functionally they are.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah. It's sort of like on paper, this,
of course,
if all things being,
anyone
all
could
things
be,
being
yeah.
even
yeah.
would be, but if it's like this, a Billy McFarland or a Zuckerbergian type,
yeah.
then it's sort of like leaving out a lot of.
Yeah. Like the closest one you would get would maybe be like Omar on The Wire.
Okay.
But he's robbing other anti-heroes, mm-hmm. sort of. Like, and that show like took pains to like be complex and like show complexity in people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, and it's so rare, few and far between.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, and partially, you know, as people of color in Hollywood, you know, we also get that pressure. It's because like, well, if we're going to take our one shot and like, say in our case, be the Asian thing or the next Asian thing.
Well, wait, what's one of the biggest like anti-Asian anti-hero movie was like Better, the one that was that Roger Ebert was like.
Better Luck Tomorrow.
Yeah, Better Luck Tomorrow, right?
Sure.
He's like, those are Asian anti-heroes, right?
Sure.
It's like again,
that's
Heather's kind
a,
of like
a
Heather's kind of way.
Not a huge movie.
Right, not a huge
that
movie.
That was like
no.
an art. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess what I mean is like, maybe like in our case, right? Something like Crazy Rich Asians, mm-hmm. where everyone is like impeccable and
yeah.
the stakes are minuscule.
Ken Jeong's like maybe the most only person
yeah.
who like has a little salty,
but like
energy.
Like otherwise, like you can't be a bad Asian person.
Not
right?
in that universe, I
right?
Guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, or like in the next thing.
Oh,
you
mean
know.
Just in general
yeah,
and representationally?
It's hard because then you're gonna
yeah.
be like, oh, wow, you're
a villain.
Yeah, like a true villain,
right?
Like it's like
without falling into the tropes that
exactly.
are associated
there's
with
so
that. Yeah.
little representation that it's nearly impossible to have legitimate moral gray areas for people of color.
Interesting.
And that's partial. I guess I just yeah I hate anti-heroes as a concept because I don't
the
hate
nihilism.
Them. It just doesn't work. Yeah.
Yeah. The taxi driver kind of.
Exactly.
The ultimate, like an Asian taxi driver, I'm having trouble.
Well, like, but like, yeah. for instance, like
Lyft driver, yeah.
Like one thing that it's like, you know, like in our God, this is getting way too deep. But like, right, like all so many serial killers, so many mass murderers mm-hmm. are white men.
Oh yeah,
and
except Wiley Morris.
One,
yeah.
of course, but yeah. there's exceptions. Of course, there are, yeah. of course, there are exceptions.
And then she, yeah, yeah.
But one of the reasons why, let's just say for people of color, there's so many proportionally fewer. Sorry. Maybe not one of the reasons. My theory
okay.
on why there are so many fewer, like, you know, serial killers of color is because those people don't get to live long enough unincarcerated to form a series of murders.
Mm.
Because, like, you know, especially Black and Latino folks mm-hmm. and, like you know, Middle Eastern folks, whatever, in the United States.
This isn't realize like this could... backfire as an argument so quickly.
No. I'm saying like because of our racist society, like people who exhibit the tendencies of, you know, that sort of violence, that sort, those sorts of mental issues
can't like thrive through,
are destroyed by society. Earlier, and it is white privilege that allows white male psychopaths
homeschooling
to exist so long that they get to kill a bunch of people.
Okay, I see.
I'm not saying because like everyone,
I feel like the flip argument because like someone on Fox News is just like, oh, we let them out, they're gonna kill more people, you know.
Oh no, for sure. I'm saying like law enforcement. One effect of racist law enforcement going all the way down to like the schools is that, you know, the other side of that filter is that that's why all the serial killers and mass murderers are white guys, because they slip through the filters with their privilege. And again, those filters are fucked up, but like, honestly,
I would even like throw in like what we're dealing with here. Is sort of a white collar crime, essentially. Like fraud is sort of like a white collar crime.
Yeah.
And like generally the kind of cons that are, you know, or grifting at this level, like where there's actually like venture capital people around it.
Sure.
It's all like sort of this white collar crime. And to the point like Ja Rule is even just like, nobody got killed.
Yeah.
Like that was like his takeaway from the entire excursion. Just like he actually ended up like rebranding and working with
the other guy,
M. David Lowe.
Can we just...
M. David. Which...
Incredible.
I don't know.
Incredible.
What, no apostrophe, nothing. M. David. I don't know how to even say it. But yeah, they have... It's called Icon.
Is it...
With two N's. I-C-O-N-N.
Is it still in business?
It's in the epilogue of this movie, which just came out. So I'm going to say...
Presumably, yeah.
It is, but probably not for long, is my guess. Or people just like or don't want to book Ja Rule anymore for anything is my other guess. I mean, I don't even know what his hit song was. I had to look it up. It's with Ashanti, apparently. Yeah. So
I mean, Ja's fine as an artist.
As an artist, he seems to have like also this idea that like I love this other quote where he's like, "We're like it's his magic bird effect." It's like Magic Johnson and Larry Bird getting together and bringing bringing hip hop and venture capital together. That's what him and Billy are going to. He tries to make it like a racial thing that him and Billy are doing something together, and they're going to bridge. Like he's going to bring whatever. The implication is he's got some kind of street hustle, and then Billy's got some kind of legit hustle, and they're going to merge. And he also calls him his partner in crime in the very beginning of this documentary.
It's amazing. Great. Yeah. The other thing that these morons don't seem to get is that, like, if you really want to make money throwing a music festival, throw it someplace where you can take kickbacks from fucking drug dealers to sell everyone Molly and cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
It was wild, actually.
Well, like, it turned out that most of the problems were that it was not in America. Like, all of the taxes they had to pay on everything.
Yeah, it was just insufficiently funded because it was, like...
The laws were different. They didn't have the same infrastructure. They had it in the same weekend as a huge, like, boating event that like, booked out every hotel.
Have it in Miami.
Yeah.
Honestly.
They really fucked up, like, on so many levels.
On only one level, I feel, right? They could have done this in the U.S.
Yeah, you could have done it in the U.S. You could have just done it upstate New York. You could have done it, like, you know. They could have done it on they could have done a party on a boat and just promote and just had it be industry only. The thing is, like, they weren't talking about in the beginning it was supposed to be industry only. And then that sort of spiraled out into, well, people that have no experience. They're tech bros.
Yeah.
They have no event planning experience. Well, and it's that also comes just across, like, too, yeah.
Industry only means it's a promotional event, which means it's marketing, which means you spend a proportional amount of your marketing budget on it, which means it's a weekend in the Hamptons.
Yeah.
Tops.
Yeah.
Tops for like 100 assholes who might be in the celebrity booking market and their agents.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Have you ever... would you say that you are an influencer, or have you worked with influencer people?
I've only started being friends with people who unironically call themselves influencer in the last year.
Uh-huh.
Or people I
what
know
led to that?
Have, well, a couple of people have like kind of become that, or like younger. So that's something, I'm a little older, so I have a lot of trouble wrapping my head around that. I think, like the term meme, it's gotten so like bastardized from the word as I sort of see it, so I just have a lot of trouble personally like swallowing it.
I mean, they kind of bandy it around as a term that is a given term.
Yeah, and I think it is. I think it's a given term in the world. Mm-hmm. I just personally have trouble with it because
or
I'm
is it
like,
who self identifies as that? Yeah, like someone who does it for a living, I guess.
Yeah, I think the answer to that rhetorical question is more people than you'd think.
Yeah, no, I mean, as someone who like checks out a ton of podcasts and just sees like who's making podcasts, it's just like self-identified authorities on things.
Sure.
You know, self-appointed authorities.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think like, you know, what it is it's just like DIY marketing.
Right.
Right? It's like now marketing is a hobby and that used to be a business thing. But who cares? I get that people care. Mm-hmm. I think like, you know,
is this film like legit as a critique? Is it critiquing influencer? I mean, it kind of like just kind of throws it in there. It's it's mostly a bunch of people that just are liars, pathological liars.
Yeah. Well,
and also just people that were their pawns.
I think the thing is a more...
but they get paid $250,000.
Well, I think a more interesting thing would not be how the generations are separate, but a thing about how marketing has just been marketing forever. And
P.T. Barnum.
And P.T. Barnum to, you know, literal Don Draper to influencers is a direct line to Donald Trump along the way. But you know what I mean? Like, it's a direct line... that isn't like the rules have not changed that much. Like the scale hasn't changed that much. It's a little more distributed because of Instagram, but I don't know. It's not that like to me.
Well, you know, the scale is changing in the sense of like, right. Like how many people are just like, I'm a podcaster now.
Yeah.
So like, I'm like, everyone does want to be the center of the story.
Yeah,
in some ways, right?
But I feel like that it's still like distilled down to like a couple hundred or maybe a couple thousand people at most, as it was when it was more centrally controlled by advertising. And then, but again, P.T. Barnum lived in a time, you know, where everyone would print their own fucking newspapers.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or like, you know, and so, but and obviously those people were like, you know, the gatekeeper was economics. You had to be of a certain socioeconomic status, so that is a little more democratized. But other than that, it's not like the collective, it's not like we collectively have like more desire for like more people or anything like that. It's still about the same. The economy mm-hmm. just is in slightly different places mm-hmm. in terms of like where the attention goes, how many people, but it's still like people still have 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. They still sleep about 8 hours, give or take. Like their eyeballs still need to look at something entertaining for 2 to 16 of those hours. And like that hasn't changed, you know. If it's coming through ABC, if it's coming through going down to look at a fucking elephant, if it's going down to like, you know, tossing a hoop around, like those are all the same. Mm-hmm. And I think those similarities are more, those similarities and parallels are more interesting than like trying to like, you know, separate mm-hmm, these mm-hmm. people from these things. It's like, yeah. Like
saying that influencers are a new breed of thing when they're yeah. essentially an evolution of a thing.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
I argue they're not even that much of an evolution.
Yeah.
They're just like a slightly different paint job and like a slightly different way of accessing them.
And we're sending people to spend more of those minimal entertainment waking hours to Netflix.
Yeah. Also, yeah, exactly.
By nature of this discussion and Hulu to some extent. So
I think I feel confident in saying steal this if you can. Don't watch it on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Don't watch. Don't give them their fucking eyeballs. It's yeah. a disgusting piece of work.
You can also, yeah, just read some factoids and get some of the same Schadenfreude.
Yeah, I will say this. Do you feel like you got anything new out of this documentary?
Having watched both of them, other than these little weird details, and there's still stuff I didn't really dig into so much, like yeah. Chuck Schumer's PR guy ends up working for Billy at some point, or is consulting yeah. Billy at some point. And then like Billy's like mentor, this guy Aubrey McClendon, basically probably committed suicide. And for right. being the guy he looked up to as like a hustler and sure. like a business guy. I don't know. I wouldn't say I was looking forward to both of these things.
Sure.
But, and the fact that they released the Hulu one immediately before the Netflix
right,
one.
Right, like, right,
I got sucked into the hype.
Right,
as
of
well.
Course.
So it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
all of the marketing, it's just like a mirror of the marketing world. That here's was
so I guess my question is like, to me it felt like, and I felt like there's a little bit of this, like during the Scientology documentaries, and maybe it's mm-hmm. just because like it like, just felt like there wasn't any revelation.
You feel like that was going clear. You felt like there wasn't a yeah. revelation with that.
And maybe it's because I just read
maybe
that.
You already,
one.
Maybe you knew. More
I read that New Yorker article. Yeah. yeah, of course. Like, yeah. but I'm not a huge like think piece reader, frankly. But like,
yeah.
I don't think there was anything in this documentary that I didn't know.
It's interesting that, yeah, like just throwing it in comparison to Going Clear, because it is sort of just about this sort of blind belief in a yeah. way with like hucksters.
Sure.
So, yeah, I would say I learned.
I mean, I learned a few
I learned
names.
That he's in jail. And
I knew he was in jail.
Other big difference in the Hulu doc is he has a girlfriend that he met while he was on bail, he was sticking by him while in jail. There's good. Interviews with her. Great. It's not super
sure.
It's just a bit of character flavor, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I feel like all these facts I saw in probably a Jezebel article, mm-hmm. one Jezebel article.
Yeah.
And as far as like, you know, you get color, you get a couple names, you put a face to the Bahamians. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Actually, that was maybe the thing I got the most.
Yeah. I guess
out
that's
of
true.
The Netflix film. And there's a whole movement on to like supposedly the Fuck Jerry guys donated to her GoFundMe. And like it's unclear still. Like how much they got paid or whatever.
Yeah.
And then also I like that
if they didn't donate yeah. their entire producer fee to yeah. her or whatever, make it right with the Bahamians. Like
they also try to claim that they got shorted
yeah,
the amount
I know.
Of money they
yeah,
were
I saw
paid
that.
To.
Yeah. Fuck them. You and know who else got shorted? Every comedian on Twitter.
Yeah. Except for me. They didn't bother ripping any of my shit off. And also Meg Wright on Twitter started a fuck Jerry yeah. campaign to try to get people to not follow the Fuck Jerry accounts, which is
it's unbelievable.
Good, yeah.
If you're following, honestly, if you're because I actively block whenever I'm on Instagram and people like repost like any of those aggregator mm-hmm. like accounts. Those people are the worst. Mm-hmm. Like they're so fucking unoriginal. It's just painful and disgusting. But yeah, Fuck Jerry and Fat Jew yeah. are the godfathers of that style.
Oh, dude. Okay, this is a sort of a side thing. Like I noticed that there was like a podcast that was just reposting full episodes of popular podcasts. I'm like, how are you even, are you able to you can't monetize that. And like, what are you even doing by doing that? Like, it just straight up like doing the equivalent of, you know, like old blog style stuff, just ripping content. Yeah. I'm like, what? You can't even do anything with that. What are you even trying to do?
Maybe they can.
Maybe. I mean, why do it if there wasn't any legit? Like, here's an episode of My Favorite Murder.
Yeah.
While you can also listen to another free version of the same thing. Makes no sense.
I don't know. I bet you would be depressed to learn how well they do.
Ugh,
I'm just guessing. I have no idea.
Very easy to be depressed. Yeah. Andrew, we also like to do a segment where we ask our guests to talk about a documentary they'd like to see, or that, you know, kind of pitch an idea for a documentary that they haven't seen yet in the world. Have you thought about one?
This one is very, very dumb. and it's only because I tried to do it a couple years ago.
Oh, you did try to do it.
Kind of.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you what it is. So this is apropos of nothing other than, again, this is an idea I had a long time ago. Herbert Hoover used to play this sport called Hoover Ball, which was basically volleyball, but with a 12-pound medicine ball. Yeah.
It sounds like you'd break a bone.
It doesn't. It's crazy town. It's a thing.
It's like Road to Wellville or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a bonkers sport. So this would be about many years ago, probably like 10 or so years ago when I lived in New York. My friends and I got a medicine ball and built ourselves like basically a volleyball net and tried to play Hoover ball one time. And needless to say, only one person was even able to get the ball over the net.
Uh-huh.
It's very hard. And the person that did, we tried to return, and thankfully no one sprained a wrist.
Yeah.
But yeah, Hoover ball. What?
That sounds like a 30 for 30 I would watch, actually.
Yeah, right? Like, it's just, but yeah, it's well documented. They would just go out in the White House back lawn and I guess huck a medicine ball back and forth. We didn't find out anything about it or do any real research, but it is a thing that exists that someone should find out more about.
I think that exactly a 30 for 30 type thing about a bunch of bone fractures. I had an idea just yesterday that someone should do a documentary about Gary Panter, who is a visual artist. Mm. He was involved in the punk scene, still makes music, makes crazy drawings. And he was also one of the set designers for Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Oh, cool.
There's already another documentary about the other guy who worked on Pee Wee's Playhouse. And just randomly, because a friend of mine does stuff with Gary Panter, and I'm like, I was in a video store in South Pasadena. I'm like, is there a documentary with Gary Panter? There should be.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I have the energy or time to make it.
Sure.
So if someone listening wants to do it, that's my pitch, is the Gary Panter doc and then the Hoover Ball doc. And
it's
Andrew,
so
where can people find you on the old internet?
Podcasts? I'm just at Andrew T, less than misspelled TI. Mm-hmm. And Yo's This Racist. Give it a listen.
How was your San Francisco Sketchfest show?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
Is it up there? Did you post it already?